Welcome to Sounding Off with Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. It comes out on Sundays, and that is where you get the first look at these great podcasts, our op-eds, upcoming guests, and we'd appreciate it if you would go over to Facebook and give us a like. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. I'm thrilled to have on the line with me my friend Derek Wilburn. He went from backyard activist, concerned about what was going on in America, to political pundit. He was the vice chair of the Colorado GOP state party. He is the founder of Rocky Mountain Black Conservatives and also the founder of a great program. It is the People of Color Intern Program. Am I getting that correct, Derek Wilburn?
People of Color Capital Interns is the proper name, but yes, you got it correct.
Okay. And be sure and check that out. First of all, Derek, before we get into the subjects of the day, tell us about this intern program that you're doing.
Well, the long short is, we forever, since I've been alive anyway, the Conservative Party has sought to make inroads into the black demographic and done so with shocking ineptitude. I mean, you don't work on something for 50 years and you're losing 94% of the vote and think that you're succeeding.
Right.
So they just don't know what they're doing. So I had the idea to begin taking young, college-aged black Americans and setting them up to work in internships specifically for conservative Republican legislators. So we begin exposing them to the truth about who conservatives are, what we believe. They also get exposed, of course, to our legislative process and Capitol Hill and all that stuff.
Oh, that's great.
And then they can form their own opinions about
what a novel idea.
About the Republican Party. Yeah, imagine that. So
what
we,
a novel
we recruit
idea.
Them from all around the country. We've had them from Arizona State, from California Fullerton to St. John's in New York City to Florida International. Every summer, we send a batch of interns. We pay for their airfare. We pay for their lodging. The internship itself is paid, and they get exposure to our legislative process and a tremendous experience, and it changes their outlook on conservatives for the rest of their lives.
How can people help you, Derek Wilburn?
POCCinterns.com is the website, POCCinterns.com. Give it a surf. It's very, very enlightening. It's very inspirational. This isn't cheap. So needless to say, any contributions are very much appreciated. The interns cost us anywhere from about $5,000 to $10,000 each. And next year, we're hoping to send 40 or 50 of them. And we're not a great, big, intensely... what's the word I'm looking for? We're not one of these organizations with a lot of overhead. Literally, of every dollar that people contribute, about 98 cents goes directly to getting these interns into positions every year. So any and all contributions are a benefit.
Are they tax deductible?
Yes, the Rocky Mountain Black Conservatives is a 501c3. All contributions are fully deductible.
Okay, very good. Well, let's jump into the subject of the day. Since you and I, I walked with Rocky Mountain Black Conservatives at the Martin Luther King parade this year. A lot has changed from then to now, Derek Wilburn. What's your perspective on what is going on in America today?
I've never seen it. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. The idea, well, if we're going to trace it to the genesis, of course, then people would say the genesis was the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, whatever that's been about 2.5 months ago or something like that now. And from what I've seen, I haven't seen anything you haven't seen, but from what I've seen of the publicly available information, George Floyd was murdered. That was a homicide. It was unjustified. And we have a legal process to address that, and hopefully that's what's happened. But the death of George Floyd, while I was upset by it, and I am, I was upset by it. It was a terrible thing. I've never been so upset that it forced me to go out and steal a TV. So what we have is people who are virtue signaling and who are acting out in ways that are disproportionate to what actually happened. And I've never seen anything like it. And even if you did get that upset, we see people in Denver and in Los Angeles, I mean, 1,800 miles away, throwing bricks through windows and burning down buildings to protest what was unrighteous. The whole idea that two wrongs make a right is on steroids in our country right now.
It is. And there's something that is underlying. This has been percolating, I think, Derek, underneath the surface. This has been fomented, I think, by this unrest, this divisiveness. This has been fomented by a number of politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties. And so then with the death of George Floyd, I agree. It was a tragic event, and we have due process. We need to search for truth and justice instead of this trial by public opinion. If we get to that point in our country, we're in a real, really difficult situation, Derek Wilburn.
Well, that's exactly right. So what's happening in different cities around the country now is you've got a bunch of wannabe anarchists who are just looking for opportunity. I'm convinced if you went out into the streets of Portland, Seattle, these different places where hooligans have been out literally every night for 60 nights, burning, looting, rioting, attacking law enforcement, what have you. If you were to go out there and ask those people, who was George Floyd? Who recorded the wall, George Floyd or Pink Floyd? They wouldn't even know. Because they couldn't care less about George Floyd. They don't even know who he was. They're just looking for an opportunity to go out and engage in riotous behavior because they believe that the power structure in this country needs to be toppled. They want to burn it all down and build up again from the ashes. Now, most of them are white. These Antifa types, you don't see blacks in Antifa. They have no idea the black experience in this country whatsoever. So all they want to do is misbehave, and they don't even know why. It's like the James Dean movie from the 1950s, Rebel Without a Cause. These are rebels without a clue. They don't even know what they want. They just want to be destructive. And how going into a black neighborhood and burning down the buildings and doing damage and looting, throwing rocks through the windows and stealing as much as your hands can carry, how does that benefit the neighborhood, let alone commemorate the death of George Floyd? It doesn't do either one. These people are just anarchists, and they don't even know why. They don't even know what they want. They just want to be out there every night throwing bricks.
Okay, so Derek, as you mentioned, most of these kids that have gone to these protests, these Black Lives Matter protests, have actually been white kids. And in fact, I was down at the Capitol right after Memorial Day and dropped by the protests were beginning to congregate. And it was like a bunch of white kids from the suburbs, which I thought, now this is very, very curious how this is working out. So with the Black Lives Matter, it's complicated for a white person to talk about it because, and I've talked with a number of people kind of with their ear to the ground, they said there's really two Black Lives Matter. There is this, I think, real concern of people that they want to make sure that in America, you know, this idea that we're all created equal, that we have this, you know, this opportunity, the equal opportunity of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. I think that there is kind of that component. Then there's the virtue signaler, I think, in the Black Lives Matter. And then the fact that those messages, I think, have been hijacked by this Marxist anarchist, which actually is raising money for the Democrat Party. If you contribute to Black Lives Matter, the money goes to Act Blue, which is one of the largest Democrat fundraising entities in the United States. As a white person, it's difficult for me to talk about all these different things. So that's why I wanted to get your perspective on this, Derek Wilburn.
The whole thing has been hijacked. Yeah, it's not difficult for me to talk about it because I can see what's happening. And I am a direct descendant of the slave trade. But of course, Black Lives Matter. So you get this big debate going on now. Can you say it? Can you say the three words? Can you say, it's just so much virtue signaling. Yes, Black Lives Matter. So do white lives, so do red lives, so do Hispanic lives. All lives matter. And the idea that what these people are focused on, or what they think they're focused on, what they were originally focused on, is unfair and or racist policing tactics wherein the police in this country are killing black lives. And while that does happen, there's so much disinformation. Last year, 2019, there were 1,004 American citizens that were killed by law enforcement. 1,004. In a nation of 330 million people, 1,004 were killed by cops. Of those 1,004, 17 were unarmed black Americans. That's it, 17. The year before, in 2018, there were 994 people killed by law enforcement. Of those, 12 were unarmed black Americans. More people get killed, more blacks get killed than that every weekend in Baltimore.
In Chicago.
Double that in Chicago and around the country we could go. St. Louis, take your pick. So the whole idea that we have an out-of-control racist policing system that is systemically killing black Americans, they're just out there hunting down blacks and killing brothers for something to do, is not only flawed on its surface, it's just plain not true. But we have people who are not functioning on the basis of fact, on the basis of reason, on the basis of statistics. They're functioning on a basis of emotion. Mm-hmm. And you can't talk someone out of their emotional position with your logical position. So they're coming up with this ridiculous idea that what we need to do is defund, that we need less police. So the way to help Black Lives Matter is to have fewer police, which is as ill, is like saying the way to put out a fire is to use less water. It doesn't even make any sense. But, you know, what they may need and what our country may need, and certainly cities where you have a heavy concentration of urban black Americans like Chicago, like Baltimore, like New York City, they need to just be given what they want. Let's pull some of the cops out of there. Let's give them exactly what they want and look at the statistics after 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. It won't take that long. It'll take more like 2 weeks. And see exactly how that worked for you. That might be what we have to do, and that's unfortunate. And it's even more unfortunate that, as you observe, you've got a bunch of white kids from the suburbs who are the ones that are saying this is what we need to do, and they won't be the ones to suffer the repercussions. They don't live in the black neighborhoods. Black Americans will be the ones who suffer the repercussions of this ridiculous idea, but that might be what we have to do.
You know, as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking about a mom in inner city Chicago and terrified that the weekend is going to be coming around because there will be gunshots in the neighborhood. And how does she protect her children? She can't get her kids out of the neighborhood because there's no school choice. And the idea, you know, as you're saying this, I hadn't really thought about this. The idea that young virtue signaling white kids would actually advocate to take police out of those neighborhoods when she is going to be terrified at what is going to happen that weekend is actually, it's cruel, and I think it's racist.
Yeah, but they don't realize the fact that it's, so you described my mom. So I was born in inner city Chicago in Morgan Park, Illinois. Horrible neighborhood to this one of the, when you hear all the news stories about people getting shot and gangbang, we lived right down there. And my parents got my sister and I out of there when I was just a young boy, thank God, or I probably wouldn't be here talking to you on the phone now. But the policies that these people support, you mentioned school choice. Of course, they're dead set against school choice. The whole idea that if you have children in a dangerous school in a dangerous neighborhood, they're passing through metal detectors just to get to homeroom, you can't be assured your child is going to get a decent education, let alone isn't going to get shot or stabbed. And the whole idea that we want to introduce competition and give parents the opportunity to send children to another school, they're dead set against. They're dead set against all of the policies, or most of the policies, that would bring some help into those communities, and then turn around and say, if you're not in favor of keeping people trapped in this community, you're the racist.
Wow.
They don't even see the flaws in their own. And the funny thing is those who are setting up the system and running it, the politicians, the teachers' union bosses, these people, they're doing fine. They all have six-figure incomes.
Right.
They all driving BMWs, and they're all living in 4,000-square-foot houses. They're fine. But the policies that they refuse to put in place to bring any assistance to those neighborhoods keep people trapped in those neighborhoods, and it becomes a cycle. Now, the other side has some responsibility, too, because as we started off this conversation, Republicans haven't shown up.
I know.
They haven't competed for those votes. They haven't been on those streets trying to pull people over to a way of thinking that might bring some relief. So they have some responsibility, too. But these people who run those communities have no interest in real solutions. They're only interested in platitudes, and they're really only interested in those platitudes once every 2 or 4 years, depending upon how long their term is.
So, Derek Wilburn, we are really, I think, at a time for choosing in America. As we look at these elections that are coming up, on the one side, and we've seen the Democrat Party really lurch to the left, very far to the left. Actually, the policies that they're now espousing, they're Marxist. And the two key tenets with Marxism is getting rid of the individual and also taking away property rights, taking away property. And so in order to do that, that's through divisiveness and destruction and desecration. And that's what we see. There's that choice over there. I mean, take a look at these blue-run cities, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Chicago, New York. Is that what we want? Or do we want this ideal that we come together and that we unite and that we really believe that all men are created equal? And that means they're not created in a group. They're created as an individual and equal, which that's the American idea, and that they have the opportunity of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. We are at a time for choosing, Derek Wilburn.
Well, you just rattled off 4 or 5 cities. You could have kept going because you described all of them. Milwaukee, I mean, on and on this goes. So the discussion on the left, the narrative they're trying to push on the country right now, centers on two concepts, white privilege and systemic racism. And both of those are real. They both exist. I don't deny the existence of either one. White privilege is real, and here's why. A child born in America today has less than a 3% chance of ending up in poverty if they are born into a household with both a mother and a father, and the parents stay together until that child reaches adulthood, until 18 years of age. Less than a 3% chance of ending up in poverty, less than a 2% chance of ending up in federal prison. It almost never happens. And if you are born into a white household, you have a better than 3/4 chance that that's going to be the situation you're born into. 3/4 more white babies born today will be born into a house where both parents stay together until that child reaches adulthood than one born into a black household. So yes, white kids do have white privilege. There's your privilege right there. There's 73% of black kids are born to a single parent home. And as far as the whole idea of systemic racism goes.
Okay, just a quick question on that, though. So this whole white privilege, this whole white thing, it is a choice, though. It is a choice for people to get married and stay together. It is a choice for people to have children out of wedlock. So it's not society, it's a choice. Can I say that?
No, I'm not saying, no, you're absolutely right. The privilege is as a result of the choices that these adults are making. So if you wait to have children until after you're married, and then you stay together until your children have reached adulthood, your children enjoy all kinds of privilege. It doesn't matter what color you are, what color the child is. What matters is the choices that you made or didn't make.
Uh-huh.
So what you've got now in the black community is you've got an epidemic of babies making babies, right? You've got all kinds of pregnant 15 and 16 and 18 and 19-year-old children having children without the father being anywhere around, let alone being the husband. And that can happen to anybody of any color. Mm-hmm. It just happens in the black community much more frequently. Therefore, our children have disadvantage right out of the womb. But that's not systemic. That's individual choice.
Okay, so Derek, we also know that many of the Planned Parenthood abortion clinics are in inner cities. And you know, as you mentioned, so babies, young women that are having babies, those babies are still, not still, they're treasured, they're valued. Abortion is not the answer to this problem.
No, 83% of Planned Parenthood clinics are in ethnic minority communities. Everybody knows that that's how they make their living, by aborting black and brown babies. But just because a child is being born to an underage, to a teenaged mother, doesn't make that child's life any less valuable.
Right.
It just makes the path ahead of them more difficult. But there's no shortage of stories of people who are the director of housing and urban development. Not long ago, the leading neurosurgeon, the leading brain surgeon in the world, was born to a single mother in the housing projects of Detroit. And Dr. Ben Carson, nobody would argue the world would be better had he not been born.
It's a remarkable story. Remarkable.
It's incredible, and he's far from alone. So just because the path ahead is going to be statistically more difficult than if a child had been born into different circumstances doesn't mean that child should not be born. Everybody's entitled to a shot at life. So, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, but let's move on to the second point that I raised, because this is going to speak a little bit more to what you're talking about, and that is this topic of systemic racism. If there is systemic racism in the country, the question has to be asked, who runs the system? Right? That's the next logical question if you want to claim this systemic racism. Now, at the federal level, we have eliminated... Yes, there once was a time in this country when systems were in place federally that kept ethnic minorities from getting ahead. The Civil Rights Act of 1964, of course, put a big dent in that. And then since that time, we have squeezed most of that stuff out at the federal level. It's very difficult to find federal policies that are truly discriminatory. I don't even know if there's any left at all. Used to be, if you were applying for a mortgage and I was applying for a mortgage and we have the same income and we're trying to borrow the same amount of money to buy the same house, you'd get the loan from the bank and I wouldn't because I'm black and you're white. Fair Housing, it's not okay. But we've squeezed most of that out. The Federal Fair Housing Act, all kinds of other stuff. At the federal level, I would argue there is little, if any, systemic racism. If there is systemic racism, it now exists at the local level. So the unrest in our country right now was fomented by the death of George Floyd. His death happened at the hands of local police in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Police departments report to mayors. They're a part of the mayoral suite of agencies. So if we're going to say that there is systemic racism left in the country, it exists at the local level. If it exists at the local level, then the next logical question becomes, who runs the system? In Chicago, you have a 50-member city council, 49 Democrats, one independent. In New York City, you have a 53-member city council, 48 Democrats, four independents, one Republican. In Baltimore, you have a 13-member city council, 13 Democrats. We could go right through the city. They're all the same. It isn't just that Republicans are in a minority. There aren't any. I mean, there's literally none, zero. In some cases, maybe one or two. But in places like Seattle, San Francisco, you can't even get elected as a Democrat anymore. I mean, you've got to be to the left of that. You've got to be a Democrat socialist, Green Party member, or some other fringe to the left of the Democrats. So if we're saying there's systemic racism, it's at the local level. If we're saying it's at the local level, who runs the system? The same people run the system in every city in America.
Wow. That is fascinating. I hadn't thought about that, but that is the question. Who runs the system? So, Derek, we're getting near the end of our time, but the battle, and I believe this. I was on city council from 2012 to 2016 in my community. People need to start to step up and run for these offices and do what you're doing with these young people, having these conversations, because if kids are shown the full spectrum of the truth, then many times they make the choice for freedom and for liberty and for prosperity. And that's why in our education system, in our media, that in fact there are voices that are being shut down. And that's why the work that you're doing with these young people is so critical, Derek Wilburn.
They've taken over, the radical left, has taken over the educational establishment. We all know that. To the point where when conservatives are invited onto college campuses, kids riot and protest and go crazy just over the invitation.
It's astonishing.
Let alone actually coming to hear what you have to say. But there's a funny, there's a little bit of inside baseball that they never think about. So, I mean, this has gone on for our entire lives, for the last 50, 60 years, since the left has infiltrated and taken over education. They've been rubbing their hands and thinking to themselves, oh, this is great. You know, one day when all these kids get out of college, get out of here, out, they're all going to be voting Democrat, and we're going to take over the world. They've always thought that. But they forget a very minor thing. These kids graduate, they get out of college, they get a J-O-B, they get out into the real world, and then all of a sudden they realize, you know, now wait a minute. When you hired me, you told me you were going to pay me $60,000 a year. Last year, I only made $47,000. What happened to my money? And then they get a spouse and a mortgage, and they get children who need soccer cleats that they outgrow every year. And life starts to happen to them. And over the course of time, a percentage of these drift away and realize all that stuff that I believed when I was 19 years old was idyllic in college, but it's not the way the real world works. So a percentage of them drift to the right organically anyway.
You know, interesting. I was talking to a young mom, now a white mom, and went through the public education system. And she is now starting, she went through the leadership program in the Rockies and went did Arvino and Veritas, Federalist Paper Study. She said, I never learned this stuff in public school. She said, I feel robbed. And we are robbing our kids by not presenting the American idea and the truth to them. And they will look at us and they will say, how did you let that happen? And that's why what you're doing, what I'm doing, you know, I know that it's in our hearts that we want to make sure that we bring this forward to them. So, Derek, we're just about out of time. What's the final thoughts that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Nothing more important than what you just said. Run for or be involved and engaged in your local school board. Find out who your school board members are, communicate with them, spend time, whether you have school-age children or not. That's the battleground that really matters the most. People want to know, how do I make a difference? That's how. Okay. Yes, you need to vote every 4 years and all that stuff, but all politics is local.
Okay. So, Derek Wilburn, thank you so much for being my guest on the Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. My friends, if you want to do something instead of getting that $5 cup of coffee over at Starbucks, start to send some money to POCCinterns.com. Every little bit helps. This is important work that Derek Wilburn is doing. Derek Wilburn, thank you so much for being my guest.
Always a pleasure, Kim. Talk to you later.
Sounds great. And my friends, God bless you and God bless America.